A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Hello.
Hello, and joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
For a Nintendo special, there's all sorts of things doing the rounds across the rumor sites, the leak sites of the world. And the writer coming from one, Nate the Hate, who's quite a well-known leaker across the last few years, leaking all sorts of things in regards to Final Fantasy VII Remake, Last of Us 2, and they seem to have proven their credentials quite a lot across the last few years. So they've just done a write-up on the next Nintendo system. This has been, I keep saying doing the rounds, doing a lot of the rounds across the last couple of weeks. But we had a write-up on this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe about a week or so ago, from a couple of Chinese companies, some manufacturing companies who were just, they pretty much just said they were like a major Japanese company is making a video game console, and it was very, it's obviously Nintendo, it's obviously the next system. And the Nate the Hate write-up is following up from that, saying that developers do have dev kits, which is something that various outlets have already reported as well, and just touching on things like a late 2024 release date, and the announcement happening after the close of the financial year, which puts it at around about April next year. There's a rumor doing the rounds that they'll announce it in Gamescom, which would be like a first. I don't think that's big enough. Personally,
that would be really soon, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be like in a couple of weeks. I don't think that'll be the thing, but I guess you never know. And so, yeah, alongside that, we have Nate the Hate saying that some of the console specs that are out there is an 8-inch LCD screen, which means that it's not going to be an OLED like the sort of mid-generation Switch one. We're going to have a 512 gigs of flash memory and potential use of 3D NAND cards rather than standard microSD. Now, I barely know what a NAND card is, but apparently it's a new thing that the techies will know about. So there's all that stuff. That's all a preamble, because we're just going to talk about Nintendo, the state of things, and what the console needs to do, etc. But Josh, what do you think of all this?
Well, here's the thing. I'm coming at this from the point of view of very much a Nintendo casual. Like, I play a couple Nintendo games a year, and I want to like them kind of more than I actually do. I'm not necessarily in the ecosystem. I never grew up with Nintendo, and I'm kind of just trying to get into it.
What was the last Switch game you played?
Essentially, the last Switch game I played was Tears of the Kingdom, obviously.
Okay.
But that kind of proves my point, because like those are the kind of games that I'm like here for, right? It's those big releases from the most iconic franchises that Nintendo have. You know, like, I'm looking forward to the next 3D Mario. I'm looking forward to the next Mario Kart, the next Zelda, you know, those marquee titles that would get me in for a next Switch. And I really want an upgrade at this point. I've mentioned it before, but the Switch as it stands, I only have the normal version, don't have an OLED. So I'm quite eager for a technological leap, especially as Sony and Microsoft have ushered in their visions of the next generation, and I've become accustomed to the likes of SSD loading and 4K textures and whatnot. I know, obviously, the next Nintendo product won't be trying to match that or outdo it, but I kind of want a little bit more than I've got now, and hopefully these specs will give me that.
I mean, do any of us know what the 500 gig of flash memory will do? I love that. I like the idea of steering into the fact that we're all mostly console folk anyway. But I was trying to Google, like, what's the original Switch's flash memory? Did it ever have it? Couldn't find anything in that regard. But in regards to it being a general uptick in capability, you have to imagine that they're aiming for some sort of, hardware uptick. Like, it has to be something that's quite meaningful. There wasn't that much of a jump between the Wii and the Wii U. But, like, because the we have the whole PlayStation 5 Pro thing doing the rounds. There's obviously the Series X as a deluxe system or whatever. Yeah, I would kind of assume that there's some sort of tech jump in there. But Si, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it has to be because, like, at this point, they've almost sort of backed themselves into a corner in terms of gimmick. Like, you can't really, unless there's something that we're not thinking of that is really clever that you can do with the Switch, really, all people want, and Josh, as you said, is just a more powerful Switch.
Mm-hmm.
You can't suddenly take away the ability to go handheld and sit on your sofa and do it. Like, they've combined both at-home console and away console into one machine now. They can't undo that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what you strap onto that that makes it unique or weird or wacky or whatever. So maybe it is, for a rare instance in Nintendo history, at least in the modern day, just make a more powerful one that's got a few of extra small bells and whistles. And as you that's say, whatever a NAND card is.
So
if you
NAND
get a black
house.
One of those, you get free meals at Nando's. Is that how it works?
I would still take that. I think that, that's the thing. We should talk about, like, the gimmick side of this, because nearly every Nintendo system has some sort of gimmick, even if it's just a carrying handle like the GameCube. There's always something in there that, like, differentiates it a bit. And obviously the Switch was the, you know, the hybridization of handheld and docked and whatever. And I always think it's interesting talking to people who play, who have a Switch, where the majority of their game time is spent. Mine is always docked unless I'm on a train, but I know that's the opposite of at least Josh Brown. I think you nearly always play yours handheld. Si, are you a handheld or a dock person?
I'm mostly docked, actually, yeah, but yes. Then recently I've been playing it handheld more, just sort of whatever, but yeah, it's weird. Sorry, I'm just going to slight tangent, but like Jossie, you said you consider yourself a Nintendo casual. I consider myself a Nintendo fan, but I basically play the same games that you do. I don't use it that well, because Scott, when you said how do you play your Switch the most, or where's your game time spent most, my answer was not the Switch. Like, I love the machine, but I don't play it all that much.
Every other console. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we'll get to all this stuff in terms of like how much the third party stuff exploded across Switch, because I think the Wii U had a few titles like that, especially at launch, like it had Arkham Origins or whatever, and there were things like that. But I feel like the Switch really blew up as like the indie machine. Like nearly all was a Switch version of a PC game, as opposed to things that nearly always came to PlayStation or Xbox. But we can get back around to that. I think like the gimmicky side of it, how much of that do you want? Do you think that they need to do something again? Like, it's that for me, I think it's maybe using like the Galaxy Flip, like bendy glass stuff, and maybe you have like a tablet that like is portable or whatever. We know from the rumors or the Nate the Hate stuff that like the system is going to be portable, so it seems like they're still doing some sort of hybrid thing. But I'm curious what you do with it, like whether like the dock is all of a sudden going to upscale more, you can do 4K at home or something, or
that
whatever
is exactly where my mind went as well. Like, maybe the gimmick is in the way the hardware is handled, maybe even sort of completely out there idea, there is multiple different docks that you can buy that supply different amount of power. So you can play in a performance mode if you buy, you know, this dock, or you know, high fidelity mode if you buy this one. So and maybe
I'll buy them all and be disappointed. I'll never be happy.
But maybe
again,
that's a way that Nintendo could have more third party stuff, as long as they're like, it works on this version of the dock. You buy your Switch and you buy the dock that goes with your power needs or whatever your interest. Maybe that's one way around it, because I don't think it's going to be really out there weird stuff. I think you're right. I think it's going to be kind of like the original Switch, where it's just like, oh, it's a clever hardware iteration idea.
Yeah. Josh, what do you think of the gimmick approach?
I was looking forward to doing this podcast because I know I'm going to learn a lot. And I've already learned a lot by Si informing me that every sort of Nintendo console had a gimmick. Never thought about that until
that was me.
Right this second. Sorry. That Scott mentioned.
All us Nintendo fans just blur into one, don't we?
Yeah, you all do. Yeah. You all do. You and your Zeldas and your Marios and your Docs and your not Docs. Yeah, but like that's something I never ever thought about. Like, I've never come to like these consoles for the gimmick necessarily. Like, now you mention it makes a lot of sense, but I've never really thought about it in terms of what do I want to see next? How do I want to see them innovate? To me, they've kind of perfected it with the Switch, because I usually play handheld, and that was surprising for me when I bought the Switch, because every handheld device in gaming that I'd bought before was never my thing. Like, I could never get into the PSP, even though I owned it. I could never get into the DS, even though I owned it. There was always some drawback that I felt that the Switch, even though it's obviously those games don't look as good as they do when the platform is docked, they managed to get parity so close that it never bothered me. And it never felt like I was playing a worse version of a game, or a stripped back version, one with less features, or anything like that. So it kind of opened the door for me in a way that now I go to Nintendo to be my handheld system. If Sony isn't really going to do it, if Microsoft isn't really going to do it, if they're focused on streaming, this is kind of where I want my... Where I want their focus to be, to give me that hybrid experience. Let me play the really high fidelity games docked. Let me take that into my bedroom, you know. Let me take it on a train. Let me take it into work to play it on lunchtime and kind of tackle experiences both on my couch and wherever. I want them to kind of maintain that. And from the rumors here, it sounds like they definitely are. Just because I play it handheld, I want to see a bit more power there. I want to see that OLED screen. Yeah. I'm really pleased that it's an 8-inch screen this time. Like, the larger the better for me. Just strap a 55-inch TV next to two controllers and call it a day if you want to. But
you're a VR fan through and through.
Absolutely. They're getting there. And I would really like Sai's idea of giving me options. Have an LCD version and have an OLED version. Have these different docks that are more powerful or less powerful. Give us those options if you can, because I'll always want to get the most powerful version.
Yeah, definitely. That's the other thing I was going to say, because I never thought about, until now, again, like, the Switch is what killed Nintendo's handheld market. Like, they took it over with the Switch. It does both. Mm. Like, the 3DS, like, quote-unquote, died during the Switch's, lifespan, and they don't have a new dedicated handheld. The Switch kind of is both. And obviously, the Switch sells enough that it doesn't necessarily matter. But, like, Sai, you're more of, like, Nintendo... we're both, like, Nintendo fans, long-time kind of thing. Do you think they would ever do a dedicated handheld, or is this it now? There's one Nintendo system, and it's both.
I think they trapped themselves a little bit there. Like, for better or for worse, knowingly or otherwise. I'm sure knowingly, they must have had a conversation where it's like... Because through the Wii U era, especially... Now, Nintendo were kept afloat by the 3DS. Like, that was making the money where the Wii U was crashing, so they were okay because handheld. Same thing with GameCube and the Game Boy Advance, when the GameCube just sort of ran out of steam, at least the Game Boy Advance, and then the DS was successful. So they've always had handheld to fall back on because they haven't really had much in the way of competition. And yeah, they've kind of cannibalized their sort of other option there, which is a little weird, but like it's worked out, I guess, because it's a hugely successful system.
Yeah, and it's like, for me, it's weird because like I have the Nintendo Switch, like I have the OLED one because I'm head ill and I must get everything. But at the same time, I had the regular Switch, and then my wife has the Switch Lite, which has kind of become their handheld where you can't do any of the motion control games. But then Nintendo themselves moved away from them. There is the Nintendo Switch Sports. They just did that new 1-2 Switch follow-up thing. But, like, hardly anything is gyroscope essential. You don't really need it. So it's almost like Nintendo Switch Lite is the new handheld, fundamentally the new Game Boy type thing. And that's maybe, like, a whole thing where they launch out the gate with, like, a split system approach, kind of like what the other two are doing with Xbox has the Series S, the Series X, PlayStation has the disc or the non-disc version. Yeah. I wonder about stuff like that. But, yeah, I think I kind of want them to play it safe-ish, but I still want to see what they come up with. Like, Nintendo, when they hit big, but when they miss, they completely whiff it. Like, the Wii was obviously humongous, but like that was a console that almost entirely worked on Wii Sports and hardly anything else. Like, it was sold on that, and then the Wii U hardly had any traction at all, and almost, I mean, it didn't kill them, but it didn't do very well at all. So I think it's hard to make it work again.
It's a weird one because, you know, we know that Nintendo don't care about hardware like everyone else does. We have this conversation. We don't know how deeply they care about sort of upping the power of the Switch for the Switch 2 and that kind of stuff. So it's a bizarre one because at the same time, you look at something like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, everyone notoriously knows was a terrible sort of running game, just like things complete pop mess. In and out, whatever. I enjoyed it for a game, but it was kind of like not up to par with what it should have been. But people just bought it. It's like the biggest selling Pokemon game ever or whatever. But that says to Nintendo that, you know, hardware is not that important to our audience, clearly, because they're going to dive on the experiences that they want. So in that case, do they continue not to care? Or do they look outside of the bubble and be like, is it worth us putting the money in these kind of options to bring in more people? Or is it going to just come back to bite us? Are we going to produce a bunch of stuff that sits on a shelf?
Yeah, I was trying to before we went into this podcast, I was trying to think of Eastern developers or Japanese devs or, well, any Eastern devs that put as much money into their projects as the average Western dev does. Like, other than Square Enix and Final Fantasy 16, there's not that many Eastern developers that are that obsessed with visual clarity, visual oomph, prioritizing that, like, cinematic, over-the-top kind of hit. Unless I'm forgetting something obvious.
Capcom, I think maybe?
Kind of, yeah, Capcom with the RE engine, but like, just, yeah, I guess you got a couple. It's just overall, I feel like the Eastern sort of approach to gaming, more sort of specific legacy Japanese devs, like the Segas, like Nintendo or whatever, tend to have a more economic approach. Like, for the most part, Square Enix do outside of like the main Final Fantasy installments, like the amount of, they literally have Tokyo RPG Factory just putting out smaller, low budget RPGs and stuff like that. And even some of the side quest animations in Final Fantasy 16 are like extremely economical. They just fade to black and cut back up and get around it that way. So, I'm always just wondering, like, yeah, what's the general mentality at the heart of Nintendo? Do they actually really care that much about visual splendor and trying to chase what is the assumed bar that gaming has to try and hit in the modern day? Or are they quite content putting something out like a Pikmin 4 again in another couple of years? Like, that game's gameplay is gorgeous and awesome, but it's, you know, it's not that much of a leap forward compared to even the original Pikmin, if you want to go back about 20-odd years.
No, it's probably not really.
Yeah, I mean...
Josh, what do you think about it?
I don't think they care about pushing the boat out in those terms, because I think the audience, you know, doesn't care. There's nothing wrong with that as long as the games run well. And I think people are appreciative of any kind of fidelity bump that they might get. My issue right now with the Switch is that a lot of the games don't run well. Even something as marquee as Tears of the Kingdom, like, they managed to get that out in a releasable state and it runs fine, but for me it doesn't run well, like, in terms of the visual pop-in that you have to deal with, in terms of the frame rate slowdowns that you have to deal with, and kind of like the lack of just, I don't know, fidelity kind of across the board. It was really noticeable for me playing through it in a way that it wasn't noticeable playing through Breath of the Wild in 2017. And then, like, you've already mentioned Pokemon and a bunch of other games that have released where just at a glance you can tell that things are being held back, that they're working around the limitations of the tech right now. So I think that's kind of what I want to see eliminated, especially when, for people who have more than one machine, who are, you know, playing across Xbox and PlayStation and whatever, where the bar has been raised to a point where a lot of things have been normalized, like I mentioned at the start. Like, we kind of expect solid frame rates across the board. It doesn't always happen. You get a game like Star Wars Jedi Survivor that craps the bed, but the expectation is there for choice and stability, and that's kind of just what I want to see Nintendo hit in a way that it doesn't feel like they're pulling back their developers because they've landed them with this kind of lesser tech, and I use that in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Josh, you said earlier on about, like, solid state and, like, instant lack of loading and stuff like that. It's so noticeable when you go from playing something on a modern system to going to the Switch to play Tears of the Kingdom, going in and out of shrines every time, being ground down by a loading screen. I'm playing Pikmin 4 right now and it's great. Same. Other than the fact that the loading screens is just like a reminder of a time that we should be out of at this point. Like, we're so spoiled by it on every other system.
That's it, right? You know, sorry, just to add on to that point, I think it's like, it sounds like it probably is nitpicking to an extent, but I loved in Tears of the Kingdom where it had that effect where you could see straight into the shrines. And in my naivete, because I didn't really understand the limitations of the Switch hardware, I assumed that just meant I could walk straight into the shrine.
It would have been so good.
Mm. Yeah, and it would have loaded, because I've kind of become accustomed, like I said, to that kind of seamlessness on a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X. And when it didn't happen, I kind of thought, oh, that would have been a cool little feature, a cool way to connect this massive open world that obviously they was simply impossible due to the machine they were working on. But if say Tears of the Kingdom came out on the next Switch and that was a possibility, I thought, I just think that those little touches are kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, my thing is, Tears of the Kingdom was like, that effect for me kind of worked enough where it was like a bridge between the two. Because, like, with loading times in particular, like, it's, I don't know, it depends how long they go on for. Like, I'm playing through Oxenfree at the minute because I'm like, I want to play through that and then get onto the sequel. And I've tried that game on Switch. It's horrible. The loading times take about half a minute. Like, it's ridiculous. I ended up just, and it glitched out, and so I ended up restarting it on PlayStation. But that was one of those things where I was like, okay, like, the guts of this system, it hasn't been optimized for it. But in terms of Tears of the Kingdom, it's like, that's kind of one of the wider questions is, like, does the average person expect loading times to have gone away by now? Or is that, like, because not every game is prioritized. Like, Final Fantasy 16 does it really well. You pick any area and you're in there and like almost immediately. But I don't feel like zero load times has become you know, like a constant thing across all games. Like, I want it to be, but like until it is, I wonder if that'll be something held against Nintendo. There's something I was going to throw in as well is like the like dev time for games, like Pokemon Violet and Sapphire. I felt like it was just churned around. They have that yearly turnaround model, and Violet and Sapphire was you know, straight after Arceus as well, or Arceus, and it was like you could feel it, like you could really feel that they were just like doing another one. Like Arceus was almost the tech demo to get to the next main installment, and then Arceus ironically ran better anyway. Whereas you look at like Super Mario Wonder and Pikmin 4, and like they are for the most part gorgeous games. Like Pikmin 4 runs really smoothly unless you like, you know, absolutely cake on like 100 Pikmin or something. It's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if that's a dev time thing, and I don't know how much that's a wider industry issue as well. Something like, you know, optimization, the ability to actually bug fix, and the time to really refine stuff later on. You can kind of tell that Super Mario Wonder is still obviously Shigeru Miyamoto's baby, and he was involved in Pikmin 4 again, so there's no way that those games are going to fail. But for whatever reason, Tears of the Kingdom was allowed to release with a whole bunch of jagged edges and everything.
But that's exactly it, isn't it? When you talk about those kind of things with dev time, we go back to Tears of the Kingdom and Pokemon, they're the perfect examples. Because you say Pokemon, they shuffle a new game out every year and they go, right, this one, onto the next one, onto the next one. And they need to just take a little bit longer. With Tears of the Kingdom, it was like 6 years of development. And I didn't really have any noticeable issues with performance, but I'm, you know, notoriously a bit more lax on noticing these kind of things compared to some people, but I definitely saw the criticisms of it. And yeah, 1 year versus 6 years, there's still obvious things for some people that you're right, I think there's it's more of a limitation with the hardware at this point.
It's like visuals aren't everything, nor is even performance to a certain extent. Like, I don't, when I'm talking about kind of the parity between systems, or at least trying to get the next Switch close enough to the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5, I don't mean it in terms of the next Zelda going head to head with The Last of Us Part 3 in terms of technology or anything like that. But Scott, you mentioned earlier about how you use the Switch as like an indie machine. That's what I did as well for like the longest time, and had great success with it. Between these big AAA releases and exclusives, I was playing the likes of Night in the Woods or Detention or Undertale or whatever, like a bunch of those indies on this machine, because it just kind of made sense. But now, because the parity has kind of disintegrated with the release of these other next-gen machines, like, I have no personal incentive to play those indies on the Switch anymore, because one, I always know I'm going to get a better, more optimized version on the PlayStation 5, for instance. And two, because the release of the PlayStation Plus service and Xbox Game Pass kind of means that a lot of those indies go to those services for free anyway.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Those 2 points are kind of working against it. I think that's just a shame, because I had such fun playing those indies on the Switch, and now I kind of don't, because it does feel like I'm getting a lesser version, even if it is just kind of lower resolution or lower frame rates or increased load times. The gap has become too big that I almost can't justify buying it on the Switch anymore when I'm, you know, actively paying for a lesser, again, quotation marks, version of it.
Yeah. No, totally. We should talk about third-party stuff in general, because one thing I noted down here is that the next generation of Switch or Nintendo or whatever the hell it's going to be will have Call of Duty on it, which was like always one of the biggest sort of conversations across this generation, was like, oh, the Switch can't handle Call of Duty. And like, I was always like, well, there's a Call of Duty on PSP, so like it's doable. Like, you know, there's one on your phone. Like, it's fine. It's just that obviously it was never targeted. It was like the whole thing in the Microsoft Activision acquisition stuff, where they just weren't bothered about targeting it as a key platform or whatever the hell the phrasing was. Whereas going forward, obviously Xbox, Phil Spencer has said they are going to do something like that. And so like that idea of like the Switch, I mentioned all the third-party stuff before, more as an indie thing, but that assumption of like feature parity between the bigger third parties, like, you know, the Final Fantasies or whatever, like the idea of trying to get Final Fantasy 16 on Switch right now would be an incredibly cut down version of it. At least that's the assumption. Final Fantasy 15's version on Switch is the portable version, it's the mobile one. And it's like, I wonder if they try and get it to at least whatever that bottom rung is, like the almost the Series S kind of thing, where it's like, this is like almost like a last gen system, but we try and make feature parity with whatever the latest games are. I wonder if that's their like the absolute bottom line. But I mean, yeah, what do you think about how much Nintendo needs third party? Because it's always thought of as Nintendo and their own little island with their first parties and everything else. But I mentioned all the third party stuff before, because for the first few years of release, they barely had anything apart from Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey. And it was the third parties and the indies sort of making that system like recommendable.
And I think, to be fair, they did a really good job with that, because at this point, like, the idea of Call of Duty on a Nintendo system seems completely pointless to me. Like, does anyone actually want that? Does anyone going to go like, yes, actually, I will play it on the Switch. That's what I want it on. That out of all the systems, I will get it for that. It just
because I would only
absurd.
Really get it for like the campaign or something. Like, if I was going to play on the train, then I can't play multiplayer. So then I only get it for the campaign. But then I want a big screen. So it's not going to work.
Right? And they go, Jack, it's the same what you said, Josh. It's like, well, if I'm sitting at home playing it, I might as well play it on the big screen on my fancy console or whatever, assuming someone has that. Like, the advantage of the Switch at this point when it comes to those things is the fact that you can take it on the go. That is one advantage.
And I wonder if it's just, you know,
just
when...
Like, no, just no.
Like, it's that idea of, like, I remember there was a couple of times in, like, 2015 or 2016. Oh, sorry, it would have been 2017, sorry, when the Switch first came out and Rocket League came to the Switch. And at What Culture Towers, at our old office, we came in and a few of us played Rocket League, like, and just on local wireless play. And I'm like, I guess you could do a version of Call of Duty that works like that. I know that, again, they've said they want feature parity with new Call of Duties on the new Switch or the new system, which is a way harder thing to do. I wonder if you just do a strip-back military shooter that runs like... That just is called Call of Duty, and it runs like COD. But it's
suppose.
Like the... Yeah, like
if
the dial down,
like,
version, the lunch break version,
an original entry or some kind of specifically made and tailored experience, then maybe it will work a lot better. But the way I'm thinking about it is the Call of Duty as it exists now just seems like an odd fit.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare tri-term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Completely. Yeah. And it's just... That might be me, and it might just be that one IP, because when I look at some of the third-party stuff they have been bringing across, even though it's super like outdated, but bringing Arkham across, I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, that's fine, why not, right? But Call of Duty just seems totally absurd, unless you're right, it's designed with those kind of face-to-face group experiences in mind rather than going online and playing.
My issue with Call of Duty specifically is that franchise is already on fire from a developmental standpoint. You know, obviously it sticks to this annualized release schedule, and it takes about 10 Activision Studios to get one of those games over the line. these
What if we
days.
Put out this fire with more fire?
Literally, right? So to me, the idea is, I mean, the solution to Call of Duty's problem right now isn't to add more platforms it should release on, especially difficult ones like, you know, the next Switch, which would need to make all of these concessions, isn't just a simple port. You'd have to bear in mind its limitations. But, you know, slowing down production of Call of Duty, giving the developers an extra year to work in these games, allowing them the time to fully optimize the experience. Maybe if we get to that point, then I could see Call of Duty on Switch, you know, being a viable and successful thing. But right now, I think Nintendo's problem isn't actually Nintendo's problem. I think they're totally fair to kind of chase this kind of, I don't know, approach to their tech that doesn't quite sit on the same level as the competition. Like they are, it's totally in their right, and they might be right to kind of try to keep those costs down, to try to not just chase the next big bump in resolution or whatever. But I think in the third party sense, they're kind of hampered because the industry is not of that same mindset. Like, the industry is chasing, like, the best graphics, is chasing the best fidelity, and through the games that they're releasing are instilling this idea that consumers are supposed to be looking at graphics, are supposed to be looking at fidelity and textures and whatnot. And as long as the industry remains that way, I think Nintendo will always lose the fight if they don't go for parity, just because we've been trained as consumers to look at, you know, a slightly lower grade version of a game as kind of inherently worse. So it kind of sucks. It's like a catch-22, because I love that they are kind of eschewing the idea that everything needs to be this high budget, high fidelity thing, but at the same time, I don't think they're ever going to win on that terms, because everyone else has kind of monopolized that being the norm.
Mm. I'd say another thing is on the Switch, like we talked about gimmicks and stuff before, like the Nintendo Switch when it launched was like they had the HD Rumble where it would make it feel as if there were like three or four objects inside the controller. They had the HD Rumble, they had the IR sensor so you can read a heart rate, which the Ring Fit still does. It's the IR sensor on the bottom of the left Joy-Con, can read your heart rate. And there was obviously the detachable Joy-Cons and the gyroscopes and stuff. I like, in theory, the idea of doing a Call of Duty that takes advantage of that stuff. Like if you do the most intense multiplayer match and it's reading your heart rate at the end or something, and then that maybe you get a score based on, I don't know, like how into it you were or something, or you're aiming with the gyroscopes and you're measuring your heart rate, or maybe you're trying to hide from a character or something, you make too much noise. I don't know. Things that they could take advantage of that I always feel like at the start of each generation, most of the companies, and Sony got in on this with the PS4, where it was like, here's the touchpad, here's the LED light on the top, we've got all the gyroscopes and everything else, which is obviously in the six axis, but they kind of faded it out. Go forth and make stuff with this. And obviously, if the first parties don't take advantage of it, then it all just kind of falls away, and we end up just getting like the third party parity thing instead, that like they can't devote the dev time to doing something more unique with it. But I wonder if I would like the idea of like you're trying to make these things work and make them separate on the Nintendo system, that you take advantage of that stuff and have fun with it. But it's hard, because then that maybe makes it feel like a kidified version of the big brother system or whatever it is.
I think the one kind of angle they do have going for themselves, and it's a great angle, is that, like I said, you know, Microsoft and Sony aren't necessarily interested in creating their own handhelds. They might have streaming systems that, you know, allow you to get a version of a game, but Nintendo can come out and say, well, yeah, we've got the next Call of Duty. You can play the campaign handheld. You can play the next Arkham game handheld. You know what I mean? And that is a real viable option and a real alternative, because if you're playing handheld anyway, you're already expecting a hit in terms of the performance and the graphics. Mm. You know what I mean? So it matters less than playing those games docked, I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And we should talk about like first party stuff, because I mentioned it before about like, and we talk about optimization and things like that. What would make you buy the new system straight away? Because it was the conversation back in 2017 when the system launched. Obviously, it launched Breath of the Wild, even though that was on Wii U, and then Mario Odyssey came later. But there was such a conversation at the time for a good sort of 4 or 5 months that the Switch doesn't have anything on it.
Yeah.
And there were like, you know, like I said, there was recommendable indies. There were nice little portable games that were on there. But it didn't have that big, oh my God. Well, it did and it didn't. It had Breath of the Wild, but you can argue it was a Wii Wii U game. It's that thing of like, yeah, what do they try and launch with? One of the rumors doing the rounds is that they do have the next main 3D Mario ready, which throws me off because I'm like, you guys are doing Mario Wonder this year, and they've never done like two big new Mario games like one year after another. They'll still sell. It's still Nintendo and Mario, but it's just, it's interesting doing Mario Wonder, I guess, to sort of sunset the Switch, and then you do the next main Mario, and that sets off the whole new generation. But in terms of their IP, they haven't got that many boxes left to tick unless they finally do Metroid Prime 4, and that's like a launch title, or maybe that's what it was being made for all along or something, or you do a new Star Fox or something. I don't think there's that many first parties that are sort of, you know, yet to do, unless they have a brand new thing, a new IP.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, to sort of thinking about early days of the Switch is exactly that. It's what I remember. I didn't get it on launch because I was one of the, you know, three people in the world that played Breath of the Wild on Wii U.
Right. You had a better inventory system. That thing was made for the tablet.
It's true.
Doing
it's
all
true.
The weird D-pad stuff on the Switch. Yeah.
And then after that, what I do remember, and it's funny what you say about two Marios, and this is kind of, you know, arguable. I seem to remember Mario and Rabbids launched the same year as Mario Odyssey. But I mean, that's slightly different.
I was going to say, there's always something Mario every year. There's always like Mario Golf, Mario Aces, whatever it is. There's always something Mario. It's just that as far as I know, they've never done like the next main one and then next main one straight away. There's always been like a couple of years or a re-release or something to sort of space them out. Usually they're bigger deals.
It was Odyssey was the reason that I wanted to, was like, now I have to have it. Like, I can't put it off any longer. I remember getting Mario and Rabbids first. That's what made it come to mind. But I think you're right. I think Metroid Prime 4 is very likely a launch title, or maybe it's on both systems or whatever. But yeah, I would love a surprise, and I don't want that surprise to be Arms 2. That would be a bit silly.
Oh god. Legs, the sequel. Yeah.
Legs. I'm telling you, it's my F-Zero idea from the UBP a few weeks
do
ago.
Do F-Zero, for the love of god. If they
open
get
world
a new system,
F-Zero, let's do it.
Yeah, if they've got a new system that can do like 4K, 60 FPS, whatever, do the new F-Zero. That's one of the only things they haven't done a follow-up to in forever.
And like, also, I mean,
yeah,
slightly weird, but like, if they are going the route of trying to attract a wider audience with third-party stuff, that's the kind of first-party IP that could pull people in, because it's got a different vibe, it's got a different tone. It can be not adult, but it's not kiddie, you know, it's a bit of a broader thing. So maybe that's a good sort of statement of intent.
Do you know Star Fox Adventure? Obviously, that thing was a complete mess of development.
I love that
do
game.
That, but with Captain Falcon, and then you get to race when you get to the different cities and stuff. Do something big like that. Josh, what do you want on your Nintendo wish list?
Well, here's the thing. When I bought a Nintendo Switch, I had never played a Zelda, and I'd never really played a 3D Mario. So the reason I got that console was because everyone on the one
shaking
hand,
heads.
She mine just exploded.
I almost said you still haven't, but carry on.
Oh, I would kill you. There'd be a murder happening live on this podcast if you did that. Yeah, so obviously I got the console because everyone not only were raving about those installments, but Breath of the Wild obviously was being heralded as a game that revolutionized an entire genre. So with the Switch 2, I'm not asking for much. I'm just asking for games that are going to redefine how I view games. You know what I mean? That's all I want. Doesn't matter what franchise it is, because I have no familiarity with any of them. As long as the games, the first party games, are of a high quality and people are raving about them, that will be enough to get me in. Like, I just want an excuse to play Metroid. I want an excuse to play Star Fox or whatever it is. These franchises I've heard so much about, but need a jumping in point. And it just so happened that Mario Brothers Odyssey and then Breath of the Wild were those perfect jumping on points for a newcomer like me, and I kind of want that again. That said, I will take whatever the next 3D Mario is as a launch game. I will take the next Mario Kart, if they do have one in development, as a launch game. Something that, as a casual, I'm familiar with and is kind of bankable, I guess, because, you know, even if the next Mario Kart sucks, I will play it. I need to play that game, so something like that would get me in, definitely.
Yeah. Like I said, it's been so long. I'm trying to think of stuff they haven't done for a while, but we mentioned this on one of the other podcasts. But yeah, the idea of them coming back in with the new Mario Kart and maybe calling it something definitive, like whatever this new system's called, maybe you just call it Mario Kart, whatever that is. And it just is the new like landmark thing. Because I feel like that's one of the only complete world-demanding franchises right now. That like the amount of success that Mario Kart 8 has had, maybe you can just launch a system off just the next one of them and you don't need much else. I personally want Star Fox. I don't know if that franchise franchise is too old or whatever. They tried it one on the Wii U and it was terrible. And it's one of those things where, like, it's very on rails anyway, but I think there's a cool way to modernize that stuff. You can bring in the roguelike elements from Star Fox 2. That thing was like 20 years ahead of its time. Like, there's stuff that you could do with that that I think would be really, really cool. But I guess we'll see. Another part of the leak that's doing the rounds is the approach to backwards compatibility. Various different write-ups on this talk about how the next system is a clean break from a Nintendo Switch and it won't have backwards compatibility. And obviously already that's a big talking point because people have their Switch libraries and everything else. Right now, I can't tell whether people are just referring to physical backwards compatibility, which is something I would expect a lot less. I don't necessarily expect the new system to take the same cartridges that I have right now, but I think it would be, I don't know, insanity if it doesn't support downloadable versions of it. But I don't know where each of you comes down on that.
I need it. I need extensive backwards compatibility. I foolishly bought a Switch in part because I thought it was going to have all of the legacy stuff on it, like the Wii U did, if I recall correctly.
Oh, and a lot of people didn't. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it took them so long to start putting those older games on the machine. Obviously, they kind of they've got a lot of those games now, but it still could be better, in my opinion. I, like, again, as I keep saying, as someone who wants to get into Nintendo but keeps getting hit with all of these barriers, want some kind of legacy library there at launch. It doesn't have to be, like, complete, but give me all of the classics. Give me a bunch of games that people have been recommending me for a long time. Give me them upscaled in a way. I think this is an area that Sony is missing out on. They have so many great games that are locked to the PlayStation 1 that, you know, we talk about all the time, but people just can't play. Xbox are better with it, and the reason that I, well, part of the reason I champion Game Pass is because they have a bunch of original Xbox games on there that you can jump into and play, and Nintendo have that now, but I kind of want to see that be transferred over to the Switch 2, and for them to kind of double down on it with not only that kind of backwards compatibility in its most basic form, but also with remasters and remakes and whatnot.
I was just going to, just to throw in quickly here, I almost said that before, sorry, I almost cut you off, I didn't mean to, was, they had the whole virtual console thing, and then it all restarted when the Switch kicked in, and now it became the Nintendo Switch Online thing, and we all had to buy them all one by one by one. That's one of the things to throw in here, is that do they just restart that service again? I don't think so, and I hope not, because what you're describing, Josh, is mostly what they've got now. It's not like, obviously, it's nowhere near as expansive as the virtual console was, especially in terms of things like Game Boy Advance games or older games, but you do, for the most part, have the classics. They just added Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons on there from the original Game Boy. So, like, and they're all just, they're upscaled enough to me. They totally work. They're nice in HD and everything. But yeah, Si, what do you think? Like, they've had this weird approach to their own legacy where they've monetized us twice for it now.
I can't do it again, Scott. If they reset it again, I'm going to lose my mind. Like, it's all people in sort of like Nintendo communities have been complaining about since it started. They're like, here's the online service that you pay for to get all these access to all these games from 30 years ago that you've already bought multiple times on the systems that you're in your cupboard now because you don't use them. And it's just like, just bring that right over as it is. As you say, build upon it fast, make it free. Like, that's an advertising point of the new system. It's like, as soon as you get online, you have instant access to all of these games straight away. Like, stuff like that, just... And in terms of wider backwards compatibility, yes, like, that is something that absolutely needs to be brought forward from the other consoles, in sort of like the way that Xbox talked about recently about people with their digital libraries. That all just needs to be an expected part. And Nintendo, in fairness, now they do have, like, your Nintendo account, which is attached to your Switch and your 3DS and whatever. Like, it's very easy to just slap your next console under that same account and have access to all of those games. If you're going to do that, though, you need to do physical as well. It can't be that hard. And if you can't do it, don't release a console. I don't care. I've always felt this way about backwards compatibility. I hate any hard line on it because, and we talked about this a few weeks ago where we talked about video game preservation. This is what kills it. It's like, you can't play these on new systems, so all the old systems die and stuff like that. It's just, no. Put a second cartridge slot in if you need to.
Or just something that, like, you know, you put the cartridge in or whatever, it scans.
We don't know what
it,
a Nando card looks like, so it might be different shape.
The Nandy card. Yeah, something that would, like, at least recognize the old cartridge and give you a new version of it or a download, like what the Xbox 360 used to do with their installation stuff. But I feel like they need to, for as much as they talk about their own legacy and they've kind of found it, we've all just put up with it. They've done all the Nintendo Switch Online stuff and then resold you those same games. And then, like you just said, like, like they had them in My Nintendo account, so they've unified it a little bit. You would assume that that's their, like, the way forward now. But it's just knowing that Nintendo are Nintendo and they could do a version of this. Because I, to be fair, I quite like the approach they have when they first launched the Switch Online, where it was like you get a couple of games a week, or a couple of games a month, and they added new features to them, like Mario 64. I'm pretty sure you can play online. They added other sort of online leaderboards and stuff, and then they cycle a couple of games out every sort of few weeks. Mm. And I quite like that as a way to encourage people, like, don't worry about playing 50 classics all at once. You'll get a curated selection every sort of few weeks. It was just that at the beginning they weren't nailing those games, and then when by the time Mario 64 came around, it was amongst the rest of the N64 stuff. Mm. And it's like if they did, you know, a GameCube collection now, then it still wouldn't, you know, it might be the curated thing. But it's one of those things where, like, how do you encourage people to actually bother playing those old games?
I know it's different. Sorry, Josh. I was going to say, I know it's different because on the Wii U, you could pay for it. So it's a kind of different situation. But, like, it, if you were there then and you've come to where you are now, it feels like such a huge step down because there was, like, Turbo Graphics and Wonder Swan games and every Mega Man game and stuff like that. And it's just, we got, like, 5% of what was on the Wii store, and we're at the end of the Switch lifespan now, basically.
I always assume was them going, like, well, we're going to pull this all the way back and then plan for, like, another 20 years or 30 years of doing this because we gave people way too much stuff and we can monetize way more.
If they make a big deal about you can subscribe and get the, you know, the six games to start with again, I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, you know what, just super quick, sorry, I know you're trying to talk to us, but you know the bit when they added the Sega collection, like, they've already done, like, a tiered, like, publisher-based add-on to the Switch Online thing. So I honestly wouldn't put it past them to just do something like that.
I think the one thing I genuinely hate about Nintendo is their approach to artificial scarcity across the board.
Yeah.
Like, putting out that Mario collection for a few months and then pulling it off shelves is just crazy to me. And as an outsider, I always looked at that stuff thinking, you were all crazy for accepting this. Like, how do you just think this is
disgusting?
Yeah. It's normal. I'm like, what's going on? And then I got a Switch, and then I was like, this is just normal. This is just what they do. I'm going to have to accept this, which absolutely sucks.
The cult of Nintendo.
Yeah. I think, you know, they'll always get away with it if they really want to. They can push their luck as much as they want, and they can get the backlash. They can weather the storm, and then they can charge people for the same Zeldas they've been charging them for 20 years. But I do think that they'll have a harder time than usual if this is indeed like a Switch 2, if it is a successor that kind of looks like the regular Switch that follows on and iterates on the Switch, because I don't know how they can then draw the hard line of, well, we're resetting everything. It's a continuation, but it's also not, and you're going to have to give us more money for it. Like, I think that the optics of that, the marketing of that is going to be more difficult than if it was something brand new with a brand new gimmick where they can kind of, I don't think it's right, but they can fall back on the argument that, well, oh, the guts is completely different. We're going to have to go in. It's our R&D. We're going to have to completely change things. I don't think they can make that argument or construct that narrative if it is a Switch 2.
I think they pushed the whole what can we get away with thing, right? That thing with the digital, forced digital scarcity of the Mario trilogy thing, that was to me one of the most egregious, let's just see what you'll put up with, let's push it right to the edge of what everyone will you know, deem acceptable or whatever. And everyone hated it, but we still bought it. And it's like, it's one of those things where I talked about it on a different podcast, but like, I feel like so much of Nintendo is obviously very closely guarded by the people who have been there the longest. Like Shigeru Miyamoto, they brought in Doug Bowser at the minute, who's one of the other sort of figureheads and faces of the company. But God help us dealing with a Nintendo that doesn't have those legacy people who helped keep, because I don't even know what business machinations are being held back if those are the things that are getting through. It's just one of those things where I wonder what the future of Nintendo would be if you had a digital scarcity thing every other month and they rotated through that way. Let's do final thoughts. Si, like, what's your ultimate thing that you want? Do you actually want a new Nintendo system? What's your general thoughts on where they're at and where the Switch is at?
I think we've landed on it, actually. It's just like availability of all those classics and backwards compatibility. As I say, I got a little bit heated there, so I think that kind of says I think that says it all, really. I think it's almost like one of those things where you shouldn't pat them on the head for it, but it's such an easy goal for them to be like, everything's available at launch. Everything that was on the Switch store is available. Like, it just carries right over. It's just a more powerful Switch. That's all I need. More powerful Switch. This one has exclusive games, but everything you've still got, you can play on it. Transfer over to the new console at your own sort of leisure. Mm-hmm. And by the way, here's every other Mega Man game we forgot to put on the thing, you know, something like that. Just go crazy with that. Like, that's the thing that Nintendo has over the other consoles and always had a little bit is those legacy titles. They've been around longer, but also there's just something about, you know, their older games, especially because it's all first party stuff for the most part, you know. They really just need to be like, here's all the classics. Look at this museum we have on our console that you have access to. For people that might be coming to Nintendo for the first time, as you say, because like the Switch was just was not up to the task for that.
No, I think they're a bit scared of doing all that at once because then they don't know what they would do for the next generation of systems.
That's not my problem, Nintendo.
Well, exactly. They sort of did it with the virtual console and then went, oh, we've been too good. Let's pull half of this stuff back and we'll sell it to you later. Josh, what do you think about Nintendo in general?
Yeah, I agree. Give it the Super Mario Brothers Smash Ultimate kind of treatment. Just be like, this is the console with everything on. And then, you know, they might not do a handheld console hybrid next. So then they'll get their excuse back of, well, we did that for the Switch too. And now we got to start again. Sorry, here's where we make you pay for everything again. I want to see that kind of backwards compatibility. Do I think they'll do it? No. Do I want it? Yes. I don't necessarily need a technological upgrade to the point where it is competing with the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 in terms of its exclusives, but I would like to see parity at least for those smaller indie games so I can re-embrace the next, which is my indie machine. I want that at least in that respect. And yeah, I just want to see more first party titles that, you know, make me want to be a Nintendo fan. And whatever that is, I don't even mind, as long as they're really good, they're original, and they manage to maintain the same level of creativity that I think they have achieved on the Switch, even in terms of games that I haven't played, like the most recent Kirby, which everyone seemed to love, and I just kind of love that that's there.
So good.
Yeah.
I want a new IP. I know it's only been 8 years since Splatoon, but the last new IP before that, as far as I remember, was Pikmin, and that was 2001. So it's like they really spaced their time out. Yeah. Like, I mean,
as I say, I mentioned they had ARMS. That is probably the most recent.
They had
new
ARMS.
IP,
sorry, yeah, they did. They totally launched ARMS.
That came out, and just everyone just stopped talking about it instantly. So
yeah, and everyone was just like, just give us a new Punch Out. Like, if you're just going to do ARMS, you might as well just do Punch Out. But yeah, it's one of those things where I want a new IP. I kind of want to see how they approach making a new IP for a potentially more matured audience, because everyone talks about how the average Nintendo fan is in like their early to late 30s at this point, if not even older. And it's one of those things where, like, do you then make a character that is, or a world or whatever, that is a bit more mature? They've never really done that from the ground up, especially not first party. I'm just curious about that. I don't necessarily want that. I love Mario, I love the Kirby's and everything, but I'm just curious what if they ever really acknowledge that. They've always kind of just been the all ages, the Pixar approach to gaming and everything, and I just want to see them do a new IP again, because I adore Splatoon, but like I said, it's almost a decade old anyway, and it's that thing of like, can they get by with a new installment in each of those legacy franchises again? Another Kirby, another Zelda, another Mario, or do they do something else? That's what I kind of want to see, and I want them to build something first party that takes full advantage of the new system, and then just whatever that is. I would still love, like, you know, a new F-Zero. Just like I said, Star Fox is my main one. I would love that, but I want new stuff as always, and I want to know what Nintendo does when they're given the new generation clean slate kind of thing.
What I want is the next Resident Evil game to be on the next Switch, and for them to bring back the motion controlled aiming that was in Resident Evil 4. And then I would buy it day one. So just do that, please.
As long as they actually have working controllers this time, like the Joy-Con, if you're holding it like that, your thumb's in the way or whatever, and it couldn't track it at all.
Yeah, that's just a general good thing to ask for, isn't it? Joy-Cons
just working
work,
hardware.
You know?
Yeah, that might be nice as an all-round goal. But yeah, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Sly White.
Bye.
And joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you all next time.
See ya.
Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.